Welcome to the Parkinson's Recovery Support Group gathering for September of the marvelous year 2021. Thank you so much for being a member of Parkinson's Recovery and supporting our many free support services that we offer globally. I want to, at the outset, remind everybody that I am available to you to provide support information and whatever support you might need. Feel free to call me anytime. My phone number is 360-789-1658. Do you have a topic you need to know more about? Do you have specific questions? Address them. Again, that's really what I want to be able to do, is to provide all the support you need to have a successful journey down the road to recovery. First, some announcements. I have one question submitted by Bill, and we want to make sure to address that as well. If you have any particular topics or questions you'd like for me to address, just type them into the chat room. First announcement is the following. I, over the last several weeks, have had programmers upgrading all of the member websites. You'll see the same website. There's no difference in terms of what you've seen previously, but we've upgraded the infrastructure behind all of the websites. Everything changes every month, every year, so we have to keep up. So when you logged on as a member to any of the websites, you may have found that they weren't loading. Well, that's just because we were really working on them. So my apologies if you weren't able to gain the access that you routinely like to be able to get. Everything is up and running, and so you should be good to go. If not, be sure to let me know. Second announcement has to do with some research that I was able to identify over the last month concerning uric acid. I was quite frankly floored by looking and identifying the number of very recent studies. We're talking 2021 and 2020, that consistently report a significant deficiency of uric acid for persons who have Parkinson's disease. When you have many studies that are all done by independent researchers from different places approaching the questions from different technologies, and they all find the same result, what we can say is we know that persons diagnosed with Parkinson's do, in fact, have a significant and profound deficiency of uric acid. Now, that might not mean 100%, but the odds are certainly going to be that that's the case. What's the big deal about uric acid? It actually performs a fundamental function in the body to reduce oxidative stress. If there's a lot of that, and we do know there's a lot for persons who have neurological challenges, then you've got to find ways to be able to reduce the oxidative stress. Otherwise, those sensitive neural pathways will continue to be seriously compromised and no chance for them to be repaired. Now, we don't need to ask again, is it really true? We know it's true. So you can then, and as the next step, say, all right, okay, great, that's good news for me, then I need to increase my uric acid. How do I go about doing that? And there's some foods that have uric acids that you can make sure to eat as a priority. However, there's another little twist to this, and that's the following. If you say to yourself, okay, great, I accept the fact that I'm probably deficient in uric acid, so I need to get as much as possible, that, as it turns out, might also create significant problems. Too much is bad. Too little is bad. Balance is what is required. If you have too much uric acid, you may have gout. You may have cardiovascular challenges or disease. So it's not just a question of infusing more into your body. It's a question of balance. And I hope that this resonates with everyone, because that is the key issue for persons with neurological challenges. It is an issue of balance. So too much pushing ahead, too much stress, too much trying to get 10,000 things done in a 24-hour period of time is going to create an imbalance and put those neural networks out of balance. So we've got to have some time to chill out, have a good time, relax, versus also a time to be able to accomplish our dreams and our goals. Balance is the key. So I want you to be aware that uric acid is an issue. Again, I was floored by the number of studies just recently that have reported the very same result. Now, you may find by increasing uric acid, you will see a relief of symptoms. However, I also want to say that what's the reason? And we do know also that there's a depletion, what we call a drug depletion of uric acid as a result of some Parkinson's medications. So it may partly be an issue with the medications that you are actually taking. Now, the one suggestion that I would recommend that you talk with your doctor about is zinc will also support the natural production of uric acid in your body. So zinc supplements might be very much recommended. So you might consider that as a possible next step for you. Next topic has to do with an answer that I finally solved to the following question. Why is it that more men than women wind up being diagnosed with Parkinson's disease? What in the world is the reason for that? How come a dominance of men versus women? I have to say I've been doing research on this for now a couple of decades, and I've always been puzzled by why that might be the case until finally I solved the problem. Here's the answer. Women are great multitaskers. Everybody knows that. A woman can be breastfeeding a child, they can be making dinner, they can be talking with their husband or their spouse on the phone about some other kind of issue or working at the same time. So women, it seems, are able to do many, many different tasks at the same time effortlessly. Men, however, are less likely to accomplish that. We are more going to be rattled when we have to multitask. So for men, when there is any issue of a challenge with multitasking, it creates stress, it creates anxiety. And we know that stress and anxiety is the dominant predictor of neurological challenges of a diagnosis of Parkinson's disease. One of the recommendations is that if you want to see a wonderful reduction in symptoms, then instead of multitasking, focus on a single agenda, a single task, and stick with that rather than trying to do two things at the same time. So, for example, if you are out taking a walk and you want to make that walk effortless, well, don't plan on planning out the rest of your week when you walk. Plan on simply focusing all of your attention on each step. How your foot feels when it hits the ground, how your body feels, how your hips feel, whether your posture is upright or slumped. With each step, with each moment, focus on the actual process, physiologically speaking, of walking. And what you'll discover is, my goodness, walking all of a sudden winds up being much more effortless than was the case when you're out walking and you're trying to look for birds. Perhaps you're a bird watcher, you're listening to sounds, you're talking with somebody who's a walking partner, you're doing other things other than just walking. Chances are you may find some challenges with that particular task. Multitasking, then, I think, is an issue of men versus women. Why can women be so much better multitaskers? Well, it's probably generation after generation, something that has just been genetically transmuted for women rather than for men. Women's brains are made a little bit differently than men's. There are different hormones, of course, and there are obviously some genetic kind of differences. So there are lots of reasons for why women are better multitaskers than men. But in the end, I think what I'm saying is that the stress that is induced from the simple fact that men are really poor multitaskers will aggravate the problems that are neurologically oriented. Let me now read the question that was submitted by Bill, and here's the following. What is your position on dairy product consumption for people with Parkinson's? I don't have any of the typical dairy allergy symptoms, but seem to do better when I eliminate dairy. Unfortunately, dairy is notoriously addictive, isn't that the truth? Especially cheese. So I tend to drift back to it. Once you have Parkinson's, do you see any reason to completely avoid dairy products? So the answer is the following. There, of course, are many wonderful studies of Parkinson's looking at the factors that predict Parkinson's. What we find is there have been at least three beautifully designed studies, and this is 10, 15, 20 years ago, that looked at what predicts Parkinson's symptoms. So when I say beautifully designed, we're talking about studies that are post-test, studies with large sample sizes, studies with researchers that are truly skilled and talented, studies that are done by independent research institutions and universities, and they all report the same result. All three significant studies show that the one reliable and predictive predictor of Parkinson's symptoms winds up being the consumption of dairy. So I know many medical professionals will make this standard recommendation to their clients, do not ingest dairy products. Now, I think when you say, boy, these are really addictive, isn't that the truth? Nothing better than ice cream or even chocolate milk or milk for most of us. However, we do know that it creates problems. Why is that the case? Well, if you really look at milk, think about it. It comes from animals. It comes from cows or other animals, not humans. So when dairy is ingested into our bodies, our body identifies and recognizes that as a foreign substance. It's not a part of who we are as humans. And so the body then reacts. It tends to not be able to understand what it is. So it's working on getting rid of that toxin, which is what it is identifying it as. So there is a synthetic nature to that. And that's why the body begins to have serious difficulty with digesting the dairy products. Now, one of the strong recommendations I really want to make is, yes, if you look at milk, if you look at ice cream, avoid any of those kind of products that are dairy products, given the research evidence that we have seen. But look at the many different wonderful options that have now been really created just in the last 5 or 8 years. There are all sorts of, and they do say they are milk substitutes. It's really not milk, but you've got hemp milk. You've got oat milk or oatmeal milk. You've got soy, for those of you who are not allergic to soy milk. You've got almond milk. You've got all sorts of milk beverages that are not dairy. And so we do need to have some kind of milk if we eat cereal or that kind of thing. Or even in cooking, and so it's nice to have all of those substitutes. And it's true for ice cream as well. There's wonderful substitutes of, for example, coconut ice creams that are, I think, actually more delicious than it would be the case for the dairy ice creams. So what about cheese? Well, it may be that cheese for your body is more or less problematic. So it's one of the good things to do is always muscle tests. So if you're thinking of should I buy this Haveri cheese or this sharp cheese or not at the store, just immediately muscle test it right then. Ask your body, is it okay for me to eat this? And, of course, moderation is always advisable. So if there are certain kind of cheeses that you really love and have been a soothing pacifier of your life, something that brings back wonderful memories from your childhood, then it may be that it provides some wonderful comfort that will offset any of the physiological challenges that are actually induced by eating that particular cheese substitute or cheese product. Now, butter, again, that's a dairy product, and it may be that your body can assimilate butter, and maybe that it can't. And again, I think if you muscle test that, that would be advisable. From my view, the worst dairy products that you want to avoid would be the actual milk products and the products that are really ice cream-oriented products. And then go from there and ask, what about butter? Remember, there's substitutes for butter. And of course, there are substitutes for cheese as well. So it's an ongoing challenge. It may be that if you have always had, for example, something like dairy in your life in the form of cheese, and you say to yourself, well, I don't seem to have any reaction, it may be that you just haven't noticed that you actually will feel much better if you stop eating something like cheese. So, Bill, you mentioned, okay, cheese is something that you really love. You might do a little experiment. It may be that you can tolerate cheese. The experiment is the following, and it's oftentimes referred to as the gold standard of testing whether or not you're allergic to something. Go cold turkey on eating any cheese whatsoever for 14 days. That's 2 weeks. No cheese from any source. And then on the 15th day, give yourself the pleasure of eating as much cheese as you would please to eat. And I mean a lot of cheese. And then ask yourself, how do you feel? So if after doing that, and after you're eating the cheese on the 15th day, if you feel really awful, that's the indication that that would not be something that you should continue to do. But if you find, no, you feel about as well as you did on the 15th day as you did on the 14th day, then it's going to be the case that you're not having significant reactions to cheese itself, and that it would be advisable for you, at least in moderation, to go ahead and continue eating it. So use the gold standard. You know, there are a lot of medical professionals that will give you allergic kind of tests to see, well, are you allergic to this kind of cheese, sharp, or Haveri, or mozzarella? It may be that you can ingest mozzarella, but not sharp or not Haveri or some of the other wonderful, delicious aged cheeses. However, the better actual test is the one that I just mentioned. It doesn't cost anything. You do it yourself. It's free. And it'll give you the result that will be really profound. When you eat a lot of cheese on the 15th day, and if your body is having an allergic reaction, you will know it. So try that as a possibility. Instead of saying, well, we know from the research that dairy is inadvisable, instead of making a blanket choice, you might be a little bit more choosy and realize you've got to cut down on dairy. That's very clear. But it may be that your body can tolerate certain forms of dairy. For example, I am seriously allergic to dairy products myself. When I was a child, my mother did not breastfeed me. She wound up giving me milk. And yet I had serious, profound, enduring, painful earaches for really my entire childhood. Well, why was that? Well, I was having significant inflammation in my ear. I was having an allergic reaction to dairy. Over time, I've discovered that I can eat butter, and I don't have those same reactions. So butter is okay for me. But if I drink milk, I'm going to get really, really sick. So consider this as a caution, no, you just can't go hog wild and eat all the dairy you would like to eat. You've got to be very circumspect about the choices that you make. Ask your body what it needs, what it can tolerate. It could be that your body can tolerate eating cheese once every 3 weeks or 4 weeks or every week. So check it out. Ask your body. Nothing in excess. Everything in moderation would be recommended. And again, ask yourself, how are you feeling one way or another? And now I have a fourth topic that I just wanted to mention briefly. Over the last couple of decades, I have identified, as many of you are well aware, dozens and dozens of natural options that are really quite wonderful ways to celebrate relief from neurological symptoms. It's been a real pleasure to be able to document all of those many different therapies, many of them natural, some of them don't cost anything, some of them do. And more recently, what's been interesting is there's one particular therapy that has floated. It almost seems to be to the top of my attention as being something that more and more people are telling me is really helping. I just wanted you to know about that. So it's not as if this is the one and all therapy. It is one that seems to have been really much more successful for many more people than some of the other natural therapies. What is it? Photobiomodulation. For those of you that haven't heard that particular term, it is the new term for low-level laser therapy. So it's a light therapy. I personally am drawn to like and be endeared to this particular revelation because I've been saying, as you are well aware, for many, many, many years, that light therapy and sound therapy are the future of medicine. I think we are now seeing that result. Not only are more and more people finding that this photobiomodulation therapy has been a wonderful, successful natural therapy for them to celebrate relief from their symptoms, but a recent study in Australia using Parkinson's patients revealed some really amazing results for using photobiomodulation for the research subjects. I had been waiting 3 years to see the results of that study, literally 3 years, and I never anticipated the results would be really so spectacular. So the result was that it really seemed to provide relief for many, many different kinds of symptoms. It's a therapy like some of the other successful therapies that you have to continue to use. So you can't say to yourself, okay, I'll do it for a month and then I don't have to do it anymore. You do have to continue to get the light therapy. The inventor that I interviewed of a device that a lot of people are using, this is a device from a company called Violite in Toronto. He suggested that if a person has chronic health conditions, you need to do it every day. Now, one of the challenges I have to say is it takes 20 minutes to get a treatment. I get a treatment for myself at least every other day. If not, if I'd like to get it every day. But the fact is that taking 20 minutes out is sometimes difficult for me, and it may be difficult for you. So that's one of the challenges. It does take a little bit of time. There are some recommendations that you can get the therapy by, you know, anytime doing something like reading a book or watching a program on a movie or television. I can't do that and also get the therapy. It sort of sends me out into a weird space. So it really takes 20 minutes out of my day to get the therapy. So for me, that is a commitment, but it's one that I found to be well worth it. What's the result that I experience? As you know, I don't have these neurological challenges, but over time, I have noticed challenges with being able to remember little details, and I do have to remember a lot of facts and a lot of details. I notice when I'm getting the therapy at least once every other day, I'm able to recall many, many little details, many facts, many details about what I might have done yesterday, about what I would have talked with by a person who called. So my memory is far, far, far sharper when I get the light therapy. So we know that it really helps cognitive function significantly. But as it turns out, the study that looked at Parkinson's patients also revealed that it has many other benefits when it comes to the many symptoms associated with that particular diagnosis. So check it out. I'll put a link in the notes to the posting that I have of interviews with the inventor, Dr. Lu Lim, who discusses what he's done, what he's invented, why he invented it, the history of it, so you'll have a little bit more information about it. The invention that he really created is only now about 4 years old. So we're talking about something relatively new, but again, the results that I have seen now are very, very exciting, very, very promising. So let me check to see the chat room if we've got anybody who's got anything, any topics you'd like for us to discuss. And I don't see anybody in the chat room who's called in and said, hey, we'd like to be able to talk about that. So we've got a couple of people who called in, and is my custom for each of these support group gatherings. We always want to check in with those of you who called in and see what's up. If you've got any topics you'd like to discuss or any questions you'd like for me to address or others as well. If you called in and just are here to listen, just let me know. We don't want to say, oh, you've got to say something, because you don't. It's just to say thank you very much. But again, we want to make sure that we cover any needs that any of you might have. So first, let me open up the line to Bill and say, hello, Bill. How are you today?
Hey, Robert. I'm good. How are you?
Good. Well, that's great to hear, Bill. Thank you for your question about dairy products.
Yeah, can I follow up on that just for a second?
Please.
I'm kind of puzzled why these studies focus on dairy as a predictor of Parkinson's. I mean, for one thing, what are you going to do about it if you've got X percentage chance of developing Parkinson's? I mean, basically, so what? But secondly, what I'm more interested in is once you have Parkinson's, does dairy consumption adversely affect your health or not? I mean, why doesn't somebody study that?
That is a really good suggestion, and nobody has actually looked at that. So the first question is, well, why is it that people are studying that particular question? Well, that's actually not what's happened. These studies are very large sample studies. Again, we have three or more studies like this. So they draw a random sample of sometimes 100,000 people. These are random selections of people that don't necessarily just have neurological challenges. They're just a random sample of people. And then what they do is they follow those people over 10 or 15 or 20 years. And in the initial stages and throughout the interview process, they ask them a whole series of questions about factors that are their lifestyle factors. So they'll ask questions about what do you eat? Do you eat dairy? Do you eat meat? Do you eat this? Do you eat that? What are your lifestyle factors? What about exercise? So there's a whole set of predictors of diseases of many different types. So they're not just looking at Parkinson's. They're just saying, okay, what predicts disease? So they track these huge samples over a very long period of time. And then, of course, if you're looking at a 20-year study, the people in the sample will ultimately result in being healthy after 20 years. Some of them might have cancer, some of them might have heart disease, and some of them, of course, have neurological problems and are diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. So in the data set, what you then ask the question is, okay, here are the subjects that are diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. What predicts that? What are the many different factors that we started with 20 years ago are going to be the factors that predict the fact that these people got Parkinson's disease? And, of course, they have a long list of predictors of things that they think might have affected these various kinds of diseases. So when they look at what predicts Parkinson's disease, the interesting thing is of all the factors that they listed, you know, and, again, there are a lot of them, the only one that winds up significantly predicting the occurrence of Parkinson's winds up being dairy. And that's why so many of medical professionals are recommending that people avoid dairy. Your second point is well taken. All right, so we know that it predicts the occurrence of Parkinson's. Let me be clear. It doesn't mean that it causes it. It just means that it's a predictor. So what about after a person has these symptoms, will continuing to eat dairy play a role? And you're right. We don't have any specific studies of that. Nobody's going to likely want to fund that. So we don't know that for sure. So you might want to just, as I was saying a little bit earlier, I think the best answer is, well, ask your body, do some muscle testing and ask whether or not your body will accept any kind of dairy product whatsoever and see what your body says. My bias, and I have to say I think it's a bias, Bill, is that because I've had such a severe allergic reaction to dairy in my own personal life, I mean, it really caused a pretty significant hearing loss over the early years of my life. I'm, you know, one of the kind of people that is always kind of probably in a biased sense encouraging people to avoid dairy. But it may be your body can tolerate it much more than, for example, my body. So I'd say muscle testing is always a really good idea. But the fact that it does predict the symptoms, I think, would suggest that laying off of dairy is probably going to also be very much advised.
Yeah, it's hard to say really logically whether that follows or not. I mean, in a way it does, but
oh, I think
not
that's
necessarily.
Right.
I mean, they've done this with coffee and other things that people have questions about. And it boils down to whether consuming that a particular substance has a bad effect on the disease or has a bad effect on just your general health, which, of course, the disease is part of, but not the totality of your health.
Right.
So you get it.
Well, no, I, that's exactly right. And my sense is, since the body doesn't recognize dairy as familiar to the body is having to go through extra steps to treat it as a toxin, which means extra energy is required to process the dairy. So the way I see it is that extra energy is then, instead of being devoted to healing, let's say, those sensitive cells that are on the neural pathways, the extra energy has to be spent to get rid of the what's viewed by the body to be a toxic substance, that is the dairy. Again, I'm not saying that it's a toxin itself. I'm saying that anything you put into your body is perceived as a toxin, but dairy is perceived to being a much more serious or egregious toxin than would be the case, for example, something like hemp milk or almond milk. So in the end, my view is that since it's creating some extra energy of the body to be able to digest that substance that's viewed to be foreign, then it makes sense to reduce the energy demands on the body and finding some alternatives or substitutes to dairy.
Right. I mean, clearly there are people, aside from Parkinson's issue, there are people who have these very obvious allergic reactions when they consume dairy, and they should just avoid it completely.
Right.
But the people who, absent that obvious reaction, you're kind of left to, well, maybe it's okay and maybe it isn't.
No, I think that's right. The other reality that I've been able to honor in my own experience is that if, for example, I'm eating something, whatever that might be, that is causing an allergic reaction, and I have eaten that my entire life, I don't really recognize that it is creating problems, because that's just the way I feel. I didn't realize that it was possible to feel better. So
right.
In some cases, a person might say, well, I don't have any problem with dairy. Well, if they have always eaten dairy products their entire life, they're just used to feeling a certain way. Maybe they're always a little bit tired. Maybe they have some difficulty with sleeping, et cetera, et cetera. Well, it may be that they really didn't know that they are having an allergic reaction to dairy because, again, that's just normally the way they feel all the time. So that's why I think this gold standard little test is such a wonderful idea. Is you take off whatever that food substance is for 14 days, and then you add it back in. That's when you'll know for sure that substance is creating a significant problem or not.
Okay, I'll certainly give that a try. Because there are other factors involved here. I mean, for example, people, depending on their ethnic background, let's call it, I mean, Asian people, for example, have a lot of trouble with dairy because it's never been consumed historically.
Right.
So very often, you know, their dairy allergies, if they consume dairy, are pretty prevalent amongst, whereas if you come from, say, Northern European background, where dairy has been consumed for centuries, you have a better chance of tolerating it.
Oh, I think that's beautifully said. Exactly right. And it's another way of saying, too, look, we know that's what the research studies show, but what does your body say? What does your body do?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Check in with yourself. And, you know, what it does, I think, is to say, okay, it's worth considering dairy that might be a factor. Then look into that. Begin to ask your body whether or not you ought to be ingesting various forms of dairy or not. My other big sense is that I suspect that if a person does have an allergic reaction to dairy and they have been eating dairy and they decide, okay, I'm going to stop eating dairy, I suspect that that's not going to ultimately result in a total resolution of all symptoms. They will feel better, and the symptoms may be somewhat shown to be, you know, better. But my guess is, well, it's not going to be the kind of natural therapy that will show an ultimate reduction and reversal of all symptoms, but it will help the person heal gradually from the inside out.
All right. I'll try that cold turkey 2-week approach and see what happens.
Oh, good. And let us know if you would.
Sure. Thanks, Robert. That's very helpful.
And Bill, I wanted to also say, you mentioned a study that you're doing. Can I read the study for other people to know about? Can I read the second? Okay. So Bill also mentions the following in an email. I am going to participate in a clinical trial that is now underway in Houston, Texas, for people with Parkinson's, that's studying if a bone marrow-derived stem cell treatment will have a disease-modifying effect. I'll be starting the trial in 3 to 4 weeks, so I will know more once I get into it a little bit. And so what I want to do for everybody, if you're interested in knowing more about that study, is there is a code that Bill gives in the message. I searched on that, and the information about the study comes right up. So if anybody's interested in seeing more about this study, I want to give you the code that you can use to do the research. So it's the following. It's a combination of some letters and some numbers. NCT0450673. So you just type that, and the design of the study, the purpose, how they're doing it is going to really come up. You'll get more information that way. Thanks, Bill, for telling us about that, and I'm really excited to hear the results. So give us ongoing reports, if you would, please.
I certainly will.
Thank you so much, Bill, for all that you do for everyone.
Well, thank you, Robert.
And let me now check in with, there's a second caller, and again, just want to check in to see what's up. I don't have a name, but I know it's from Ontario. So hello, are you there? Just opening up the phone line, or maybe you're connecting through your computer. And I'm not sure you're from Ontario, but that's what my screen says. Oh, it sounds like we can't quite get connected to the second caller. So, looks like we've covered everybody who's called in to our session today. And I don't see anybody in the chat room. I don't see anybody in the Q&A section. So, I think we've covered all the topics that we wanted to discuss today. I want to just say to each and every one of you, thank you so much again for your contributions to Parkinson's recovery and to provide the support we need to provide ongoing support and resources to persons diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. We now know that there are many natural therapies that are making a huge difference in helping people feel better and recover from this neurological set of challenges. So I'm pleased to say that results of this 20 years of work have yielded many wonderful insights and revelations. If you get discouraged, don't forget to get into the member websites where we've got lots of supportive information. There's a way to laugh every day. Remember, laughter, hello, creates all sorts of beneficial dopamine and other beneficial hormones in your body. We've got an inspirational quote. We've got a meditation. So you think to yourself, well, I don't have time to listen to a 25-minute meditation. Well, there's the daily meditation that only lasts 3 or 4 minutes. There's a recipe, and of course you might not want to actually get that and use that recipe to eat this week, but you may. And secondly, it encourages you. It's a reminder to say, look, remember, natural foods, organic foods, fresh foods will really help you feel a great deal better. There's a recommendation for an exercise for the week. There is a listing of all the radio shows that we've done, so you can go in there and search down the various topics that we've got categorized. If you'd like to know more about any topic, you can just listen to some of the interviews I've done of people who talk about how that particular topic has been addressed in the work that they've actually done. there are a mountain of resources there available to you as members. We update the website every day, every weekday, so you get new information continuously. So use that, please, as an ongoing support for your journey down the road to recovery. And again, I'm here available because I have done so many interviews and so much research on this. I have a lot of information about lots of different topics. So if you'd like to know more, again, please reach out to me, email me, call me. I am here and available to be your ongoing support person. My phone number, once again, is 360-789-1658. Thank you so much for being, again, a member of Parkinson's Recovery. And that's what's happening here on the shores of the Puget Sound, where all the women are smart, all the men are, of course, are handsome, and all the children are profoundly loved. Know that virtue of the fact that you are a Parkinson's Recovery member, that, in fact, you are journeying down the road to recovery in your own time, using your own choices, and using your own gut instinct and wisdom. Thank you so much for being here and being a person who is committed to restore your body to full health and wellness. We look forward to connecting with you next week, next month, I should say, or earlier if you just call me or email me for any reason whatsoever. May you have a magnificent month and stay healthy.